go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are off and running on this second day of May 2022. This is The Horn, headon.live. This is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. It's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the great globe round. And if you should happen to pop in, just right this very instant, you'll be you will be immediately greeted, although not exactly early arrivers today, as a matter of fact, because I was late to air. The interface was misbehaving again, but I managed to get it to go one more time. By the way, Bikini Radio today, it is 84, almost 85 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Anyway, earlier arrivers than me include Squeaky, Roger in Oregon, New Jersey Nick, and Natural, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chatroom moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage field navigator, has declined to hold space and become man cave. Hi, I'm Robin. The weekend is past. This is the first week of May, because May arrived on Sunday, May Day, and my pagan friends were out celebrating Beltane, and there were maypoles involved. Yes, it is sunny and beautiful here today. Maybe spring is finally here. Sure would be nice if it is. Had a heck of a nice time Saturday. A friend of mine was having her birthday, and it was a costume party. And so I got to do an actual costume for the first time, the way I am now. And since there was a running joke about, because it was 90s themed, and it's like, there's probably going to be 17 Britneys here. I said 17 Britneys minus one. And instead, I went as Uma Thurman's character, Mia Wallace, from Pulp Fiction. I posted the picture on social media if you want to see it, whatever. But I don't want to get ahead of myself, because every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. And a double dose thereof today. Because this is since I actually kind of forgot, bad hostess. Usually we thank our Patreon subscribers on the last day of the month, because what comes out on the first day of the month is for that month. So, because I unintentionally omitted that. We say thank you to our April Patreon subscribers today. That means Dave and the Blind. Thank you, Troy. Thank you to Janice. Thank you, David. Thank you, Eve. Thank you to Rico. Thank you, Jake. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Bernadette. Thank you, Ed. And thank you, Oak. And thank you, Mark and Michael of the Guffins. Thank you, Baltimore Bob. Thank you, Jeff and Slow. Thank you, Kay. Thank you, Andrea. Thank you, James. Thanks to Aaron, and thanks to Annette, and thanks to Joanne, thanks to Lori, thanks to Joyce, thanks to Kat in Ohio, enjoying her coffee. Thank you to Brendan, thank you Barbara, thank you KW, thank you Irwin in Montana, thank you Barb, thank you Horst in Taiwan, thank you Robin, And thank you, Terrace. Thank you, Fab. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. And thank you, Jeremy. Those are our Patreon subscribers for the month of April. And I will do everything in my power not to screw up the month of May and get that those thank yous right. And we also send out thanks to our first of the month, first 2 days of the month, subscribers on PayPal. Thank you so much to each and every one of you. And thanks as well to Roger for his challenge of the previous Friday. Thank you. Thanks to Rocco. Thank you, Rocco. And thank you to Elizabeth. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you to Max jumping in, getting our fundraising hole down considerably. Thank you to Chris. Thank you, Joseph. Thanks to our friends at Home Dirts. Thank you, Tom and Sunny San Rafael. Thank you, Mark, different Mark. Thank you, Rusty. Thank you all so kindly for being partial sponsors of the program and keeping this all going. Remember, the first broadcast day of the month brings us Bruce's Memorial Challenge, and that means there's a $300 challenge on the table, which, if met, and I'm going to apply Max to it, so it'll be a $200, if there's only $200 to go on it, but it's a doubling, it's a chance to double your money at the beginning of the month, when we have a prop, when the month end, the previous month ends in good form, then it's a chance to get out ahead by a day. Unfortunately, in this case, well, we had a $1,300 hole, that still needs to be filled in, so, Max got us down to, $1,200. Thank you, Max. Thank you so much. And so that's where we find ourselves. If we can meet this challenge, we will cut that in. We will cut that almost in half, and that would mean that we would be fully funded up through part of last Wednesday. Thank you. If we can do that. And by the way, we have Joey's journal to get things started. Oh, God, there's just so much to talk about this evening. Don't be hooved. Oh, dear. Behooved. Oh. Joey 2 the Kangaroo leads off this Moran Monday. Early this morning in Canberra, Australia, Scott White was sentenced for the 1988 murder of a gay man, Scott Johnson, originally from Los Angeles, then living in Canberra. Scott Johnson was a doctoral student back in 1988 and was openly gay. The coroner found out that Scott White was a part of a gang that roamed Sydney suburbs in search of gay men to assault, harass, and rob. Unfortunately, when White was chasing Johnson, Johnson ran off a steep cliff to his death. Thanks for reminding us, Joey, too. You're a doll. On this day back in 1930, a classic Moran, Herbert Hoover made a statement suggesting that the stock market crash of 1 year earlier in 1929 was just a temporary setback and would soon pass and the economy would bounce back. This was 6 months after the stock market crash and the Great Depression of the 1930s would continue to worsen over the next 5 years. Last week, I mentioned that Hoover High School in Hoover, Alabama, was named after the 31st president, Herbert Hoover, and I stand corrected. As Robin mentioned, the high school was not named after Herbert Hoover. The high school was named in the 50s after an insurance executive, James C. Hoover. Also, a high school in Ohio is named Hoover High in Canton, Ohio, and that name was taken from the Hoover Vacuum Company, which has now moved most of its operations to Mexico. So, please, if there are any more schools named after the Hoovers, let me know, because we like to keep up with who's who in Hoovers. Oh, dear. That very, very easily could have become Hoosiers, except for the fact that I caught myself. Wrong state. However, unbelievably, a high school that's named after Herbert Hoover is in all places a suburb of Los Angeles by the name of Glendale. Actually named their high school after Herbert Hoover. Junior jumps in. Why would a progressive, liberal-leaning city near Los Angeles name their school after one of the most conservative pieces of crap in the history of this country? Well, that's a very good question, Junior, but I want to know why the Hoover Dam was named after Hoover. Hoover did not believe in investing government money for any type of project that might improve the country because conservatives don't believe in doing anything like Build Back Better, They would help move the country in a positive direction.
Well, the Hoover Dam was built during the Hoover administration, and Hoover wanted his name all over that dam, but initially this did not happen when FDR became president. He refused to call the project the Hoover Dam, instead referring to it as Boulder Canyon Dam, which was its original name. That would stick until the late 40s. For some inexplicable reason, the Truman administration allowed the name to change. Yes, originally they built the dam and wanted it to be named after Hoover, and it was to be appropriately labeled Dam Hoover, because the 31st president did not give a damn about this country.
Now, and just as an editorial addition to that, not far from me is what is known as Summersville Dam. It dams up the Gauley River, and every year when they release water from the dam, it creates massive Class 6 rapids, and people come from the world over to raft the Gauley River. But the problem is Summersville Dam isn't in Summersville, West Virginia. The town that it inundated was actually called Gad. This is not a joke. Gad, G-A-D. But, you know, the delicate sensibilities of religious types and whatnot, they had an objection to calling it, oh, this is worthy of Joey and the Giraffe, Gad Dam. Not a joke. Not even a pun. Really happened. And Gad is somewhere underneath there now. So, thank you, Joey. Thank you. And by the way, that means there is a Dam Hoover $25 challenge on the table, added to Bruce's Memorial Challenge. That takes it to $325. And we are down at $225 right now, so we got a fighting chance. Lee in New York pointing out New York Central Park had Hoovervilles. Yeah, there were a lot of Hoovervilles all over the country. Temporary encampment of displaced people, people ruined by Republican politics. See, that's the thing. All of my grandparents, who were born mostly in the 19th century, my paternal grandmother was born in the early 20th century. But they knew what Republican politics did. And so it was my maternal grandmother, Ida, who told me early as a child. She said, you know, back in 1928, the Republicans promised us three meals a day, and they delivered. Oatmeal, skip a meal, and miss a meal. And she never, ever, ever, ever voted for a Republican. Neither did her husband. Neither did either of my grandparents. Neither did either of my parents. Not because of some ideological steadfastness, but for the same reason I've never voted for a Republican, because I have never met a Republican who actually shares enough of my values to warrant my vote. For me to vote for a Republican would be, well, as the old saying goes, like the chicken voting for Colonel Sanders. Yeah. So there's that. Let's see here. I had a great note earlier from Lady B. In this case, touching on the education profession. Lady B said, my cousin was telling me about his ex-wife retiring from teaching after 25 years. She taught in Baltimore. He was horrified to hear about students cursing in class, telling teachers to fuck off, spitting on them and threatening them, and there's nothing that teachers can do about it. One of the most infuriating things I constantly hear about teachers is that they don't deserve higher pay because they get summers and holidays off. One 39-year-old guy I know thinks his friend's teacher wife is lazy because she complains about how hard her job is. He cites the summers off shit and says she doesn't know how easy she's got it. That is the stupidest argument I've ever heard. Those who say that act like they just said the smartest shit on the planet, as if what they said is some earth-shattering revelation.
Duh, we're smart because we think the person who spends 8 hours a day with our hellish spawn shouldn't make good money.
As if dealing with kids who only eat one meal a day or the kid with the smelly, dirty clothes and abusive parents is easy. Teachers have to deal with kids who may have been sexually assaulted, live in the family car, or whose parents divorced and left the other parent holding the bag. You know, I mentioned my grandparents, and this goes back to a story from the early days of my grandmother. My maternal grandmother, she taught for 60 years in the Fayette County Public Schools. 60 years. Yeah, she started when she was 18. She quit when she was 78. But anyway, she taught for 60 years in the Fayette County Public School System, and one of the stories she loved to tell was from early in her career. She literally rode horseback to work, to the schoolhouse, got there early, got the Franklin stove started with the coal, and got the building warmed up so that the little students, the little scholars, wouldn't freeze. But she had one student who was particularly, he had a certain effluvium about him. He stunk. And so she sent a kind note home saying, you know, please have little Johnny take a bath at least once a week. He needs it. To which little Johnny's mother wrote back to my grandmother and said, him not stink. Him smell like him daddy. Old maid school teacher not know what man smell like. Old maid. She was 18. Yeah. So teachers do, and modern, in the modern era, sure, everything Lady B says is true. She adds, nowadays, many young parents don't seem to grasp that while you mainly deal with your own kids, a teacher deals with your kids and his or her own. They deal with the good and the smart kids, as well as the anorexic, mentally ill, and the mentally disturbed ones. They also put up with threats that would have been fucking unheard of 40 or 50 years ago. It's one thing for a kid to make a childish threat. It's another to hear that same kid was caught trying to carry a weapon into school. It reminds me of what Darlene was talking about last week. So teachers get summers off. Why the fuck would the average person care? Do you honestly think you're the only one paying into the public school system? Is it upsetting that Mrs. Smith and her husband are taking a cruise while you slave away at a job that, for good or bad, you took on purpose? Because if it is, your anger is wasted and stupid. How do you think you got that job? You had to have the ability to read, to write, and to follow instructions. You had to be trained to do what you do. That's a form of teaching. Hell, you probably make more than they ever did, and they were the ones who taught you basic fucking language skills. Teachers teach you how to read and write. They teach you math concepts and chemistry. They're conduits to your life as an adult. And just because you only deal with one math teacher a day doesn't mean they only deal with you. Get your head out of your ass. Teachers only work XYZ a year is bullshit. They go home with their students' triumphs and tragedies in their heads. They've watched kids go from healthy to hospitalized. And everybody acknowledges some teachers have to buy their own supplies. You want to bitch and moan about teachers bitching and moaning about their pay? The most insulting thing I've ever heard is the saying, those who can do, those who can't teach. Who the fuck do you think taught them how to do it? And none of that nonsense about teaching yourself. Where did you get the mental tools? Who taught you how to read a book, to engage in a conversation, and to ask questions? Who do you think taught you how to pay attention in the first place? Wow. The fucking cognitive dissonance of selfish and greedy people. If you feel your taxes are going to waste in public schools, you're barking up the wrong tree. The rich don't pay taxes. Churches erect tax-free schools that don't teach about the dinosaurs and believe Jesus doesn't want us to get vaccinated. And the first thing local governments run by Republicans always do is slash and burn through social programs for the poor and the middle class. That always includes public schools. The earth is on fire due to unbridled capitalism, yet folks feel personally inconvenienced because somebody's kids are getting a publicly funded free education just like they did. Folks should be happy anyone even wants to teach their kids nowadays. I mean, there are people who think teachers are dumb because they want to get back into the classroom, risking being exposed to COVID. These are the same motherfuckers who bitched and moaned about remote schooling. It's just disrespectful and mind-boggling. Jesus fucking Christ. So thank you, Lady B. Thank you so much for that. And speaking of education, let's check in with, Ahia. Don't know where you plan to be next weekend, Joey and Giraffe and Junior and Joey 2 the kangaroo. But at about noon at the state capitol in Columbus, can we please find a better name for the state capitol of Ohio? Just saying. That's, naming it Columbus is just problematic. All things Columbus are problematic. It lets you know who Columbus was. And more than who he was. What he was. A slaver, a rapist. Ooh. And that's not judging him by modern standards. It's what he damn did and what he bragged about. These Indians are really easy to enslave. Ha! But anyway, at around noon on the state capitol grounds in Columbus this Saturday, parents of trans kids are rallying. And they need all the warm bodies there supporting them that they can get. And I hope they get a good turnout, because just like Alabama, the attack is on in Ohio, where, by the way, the Forest Hills School District near Cincinnati, Ohio, held a meeting yesterday afternoon where they banned Turpin High School from a racial diversity awareness day during school hours or using district funds. Why? Because a bunch of maggots. Sorry. I mean, that's who's doing this. Republicans had a sad over the fact that they were going to celebrate diversity. It happened. It happened earlier, but nonetheless, the story came from the Cincinnati Inquirer. The school board forcibly postponed the event the day before it was supposed to take place, and of course, that school board, like so many others that in maggoty parts of the country, has seen ignorant people throw hissies over something they don't even understand, namely critical race theory. And so that school board is now 4-1 with maggots. And school board president Linda Hausfeld read several letters from community parents who were worried about the event. One parent said, "Voters make it very clear that in the November election, we do not want to fund social justice and political programming that is inherently divisive." Wow. Acknowledging that diversity makes life better? Really? That is inherently divisive. Recognizing the contributions of black, indigenous, and people of color, it makes the little, well, it's not the white children that it makes sad, it's the white parents. And when you think about who the white parents are, where did the ball get dropped? This is not snark, this is not sarcasm, because we're talking about millennials, okay? We're talking about, you know, late 20, early 30-somethings, all the way up to 40-ish. That means they were born around between 1980 and 1990. I mean, I'm stumped. What were their parents teaching them? I don't know. And the thing is, they've had Racial Diversity Awareness Day at Turpin High School for the last 7 years. They had, among other, here's how dangerous it was. There was an anonymous survey that asked students about their socioeconomic and racial backgrounds, asked them if they had more than 50 books in their house, asked them if they went to the dentist regularly, asked them if they'd been racially profiled by police. One of the conservative school board members, a Sarah Jonas, you can just call her Karen, said, "I don't understand how this is the business of students, staff, or leaders in this exercise. How is this not political and indoctrination to the students? Really, just asking questions is now divisive and not the business of students, staff, or children. I mean, not, well, students and children, yeah. How is this not political and indoctrination to the students? Oh, God. The one remaining not a maggot on the school board refused to vote. And all of this over an issue that doesn't even remotely touch elementary, middle, or high school, or even undergraduate college classes, unless one is in a very particular department, like maybe Black Studies. Oh, Jesus. But, you know, Lady B got us started, and this just sort of flowed seamlessly into the Moran Monday discussion. Joey's Journal, Department of Corrections, Glendale, California. Billable Rick writes, "Contrary to what Joey has written in his journal today, Glendale, California, only 5 miles from where I live, hasn't always been and really isn't now a progressive city. Back in the day, Glendale was well known as a community with an active KKK presence and prided itself on excluding people of color from its boundaries. It was a sundown town. It may have even been a sundown town, until Adam Schiff got elected to Congress in the late 90s, the city had always voted for a GOP congressional representative. Does anyone remember long-serving GOP congressman from this area, James Rogan? No relation to Orange Shrek, Pink Shrek. So I'm not all that surprised that Glendale named one of its schools after the sucking president, i.e. Hoover." John in Central PA with a question. You'll understand why in a second. John wants to know, Will J.D. Mandel be at the rally in Ohio this weekend? No, I don't think so. And says that because, well, Nitwit Nero rallied this weekend. He had a clavern. And there was much burbling and grunting and larping and smolicking and gravelating. And so... And this was in Nebraska, Stan, by the way, where the former guy said the following.
"That's what they're waiting for. They're waiting for one race. You know, we've endorsed Dr. Oz. We've endorsed JP, right? J.D. Mandel, and he's doing great.
Oops.
They're all doing good.
They're all doing good. J.D. Mandel from Nambia. Yeah. J.P., no, I was thinking of the dedicated with the J.P. Morgan Chase. And then, it's
J.D.? Is it J.D.? Oh, okay. Yeah, J.D. Mandel.
Because the Josh Mandel camp got really, really, really super-duper sad because Nitwit Nero endorsed the fake hillbilly J.D. Vance. You know, of Hillbilly Eulogy fame, who was tutored and mentored by the Tiger Mom at Yale. Mm-hmm. Josh Mandel. God damn it. But that's okay, because Josh Mandel, J.D. Vance. Oh, God, it's catching. When asked about being referred to as J.D. Mandel, that's great on the ballot, because that means somebody's going to go look at, you know, because we're talking about maggots here. That means they're going to go looking for J.D., and they're going to see J.D. Vance, and then they're going to see Josh Mandel, and they're going to be, well, which one does my God Emperor want me to vote for? Now, what is not contained in this clip, and what is just super-duper fun, is that right before he said this...
That's what they're waiting for. They're waiting for one race. You know, we've endorsed Dr. Oz. We've endorsed JP, right? J.D. Mandel. And
yeah, it was right before he said that he was bragging. Nitwit Nero was bragging about,
you know, I passed a cognitive test. You know, person, man, woman, camera. That one, TV.
Because the goddess of irony is just sort of, well, owning him right now. In fact, with billionaire psychopath Elon Musk now owning Twitter, there are some rumblings of perhaps what might be ironic hopes going around. Namely, the hope that Elon Musk, in the name of freedom, will give Nitwit Nero his Twitter account back so that Nitwit Nero can then go about the business of entirely screwing up the midterm elections for Republicans. that there's a certain logic to it, isn't there? CBS News reached out to J.D. Mandel, J.D. Vance, and the venture capitalist and author of Hillbilly Eulogy said,
look, he gives, 1,000 words of speeches every single week. Sometimes he's going to misspeak,
because J.D. Mandel, Vance, misspoke himself.
Sometimes he's going to misspeak. Everybody's going to do that. But he's doing a teletown hall with us, so I'm not worried about it at all.
He could call me
10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound onion bag, and as long as the maggots obey their God Emperor and vote for me, well, I don't care.
Because, right. Yes, Haley, as a matter of fact, he is. Haley asking, J.D. Mandel, isn't he kin to Tim Apple? Yes, and they all live in Nambia. He's so dangerous, but so funny. So unironically, unintentionally hilarious. The J.D. Mandel thing's getting legs here. Steve in New York said, J.D. Mandel, I believe that's Barbara's boy. No, that's Mandrell, damn it. Lee in New York said, J.D. Mandel, did he write The Catcher in Center Field? We have to start the week off with More and Monday because it provides the necessary hilarity with which we manage to try to get through the rest of the week. Of course, remembering his gospel and his Elvis. Scott in San Diego says, J.D. Sumner? It'd make sense since Trump is lower than J.D. Sumner's lowest bass note.
Mama sang bass.
Yeah. Hey, Steve observed earlier
Sharia law is here. Algebra, Arabic numerals, math is divisive. I know. I tutor math, Leah New York says, for a positive, because I feel we could use it. I tell the students my favorite letter is O. I love it when I explain an idea and they say, oh. Hopefully not too much math for you. You'll probably bedevil me all night long. And by the way, I don't know if you're aware of this. I hope you are. The guy who started all of this critical race theory garbage is a dude bro by the name of Christopher Rufo. He's with the it's got Manhattan in it, and it's a right wing shitbag. You know, just full of ugh. And of course it's been very profitable for them. But Ron in Raleigh says, the next panic that Mr. Rufo wants to put into place is a system of universal voucher system to get rid of public schools. This shithook wants me to pay for parochial schools and charter schools and any other bullshit so-called educational system they can put into place. The current SCOTUS will surely go along with this madness if you don't remember Mr. Rufo as the liar who started the whole CRT panic. We're so done, Ron says. Yeah, I know. It feels that way sometimes, doesn't it? Speaking of charter schools, I am not generally fond of charter schools, but there's one I've found I like. I've mentioned it in the past because it's actually the first one of its kind in the entire nation. It's down in Birmingham, Alabama, of all places. And it's a charter school for, I guess you could say, different drummer students. Kids who just have a hard time fitting in with the other kids in their public schools or their Jesus schools or whatever. And it takes in the entire LGBTQQQIA plus spectrum. But there are straight kids there, too. And cisgender kids. Well, that shit doesn't matter because Tim James, who is running for governor of Alabama in the primary against Governor Hee-Haw Meemaw, you know, Ivy. Well, he's having a hissy over the school. And he said, both he and a candidate named Blanchard are running TV commercials about the transgender school up in Birmingham. And among other things, they're throwing fits saying, they had a drag show there just last week. Tim James said that. This is the same Tim James who is making the central platform of his gubernatorial run the fact that yogurt is a religion. And we can't be having children learning the yogurt in the school because then they'll go to hell. Of course, no sooner did Tim James complain about the drag show than somebody immediately found proof that Tim James had done drag in his high school. That's why I've actually thought about that. Did y'all have, okay, so for the week that we faced off against our arch rival, Crosstown, you know, there were all kinds of spirit days, and, you know. And, one of the days was Tacky Day. And Tacky Day was the day that you came dressed in the other high school's colors. It was good fun because we all had friends in the other school, and we'd borrow their jackets and sweaters and shit, and they'd borrow ours, and part of that was a bunch of the really macho guys doing
drag, you know, really ugly drag of, like, their cheerleaders. Tim James did that. Tim James, by the way, at the time he was going to his own drag show at his own high school. Tim James was the son of the governor of Alabama, one Fob James. If you've ever seen any athletic equipment called DP, Diversified Products, yeah, that was Fob James. Maybe you don't ever want to buy that again. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to our dear, dear friend Alma in New Mexico. Thank you so much. We are now down to only $200 to go on Bruce's Memorial Challenge, a total of, we can bring in a total of $700 if we can meet that challenge. The challenge, of course, is brought to us by an anonymous friend and by Chris in Germany and by our dear friend Ralphs. Thank you all. So anyway, Chris Rufo wants to kill the public school system, put public education back in the hands of the churches where, you know, they think it belongs. And he supports charter schools, except that one. Of course. So we got that. Then something else for our consideration. I got a note from our dear friend Joy in Ann Arbor, who gave me something to really, really think about. Because, you know, when I talk about attacks on women's bodily autonomy and their right to and women's rights to control the workings of their own reproductive system, Joy added some nuance to that that really resonated with me and made sense. She said, "Robin, here's a thought I'd like to share with the community. It's important to frame information properly, and I think it's a big mistake to frame reproductive rights as mere concern about the right to bodily autonomy for fertile people who can give birth. To my mind, it's a much bigger, far more dangerous issue, and having read what you're about to hear, I agree with her completely. If the government has the right to use one organ of the body against one's will to keep another being alive, then it has the right to use any other organ of the body against one's will to keep another being alive. That means kidneys, livers, lungs, hearts. Therefore, it includes men as well. It means everyone. Distilling further, it means that all of your organs belong to the government to use as its whim against your will, if it decides that another being's life is more important than your life. You know, I think when I read this, I thought immediately of Count Dicula. You know, Richard B. Dick Cheney before he dicks you. And that decent human being's heart pumping away inside his chest. And I thought of, Steve Jobs. Remember when Steve Jobs moved to, of all places, Memphis? And miraculously, somehow, a liver just happened to pop up that was a perfect match for Steve Jobs? But nobody else? Just like Dick's heart? Yeah. Well, anyway, Joy says, in 1983, a dear, young, healthy friend of mine died in childbirth with a much-wanted son. Pregnancy is not for cowards. Our government is preparing to declare that you must risk your life against your will in order to keep another being alive. We must be crystal clear about this. I read that Russia is using Ukrainian captives as blood donors for its wounded soldiers. This is our future. Your body will no longer belong to you at all. My friend Lynette needed a kidney in order to live, and she finally got one after about 5 years during COVID. Maybe you should have been forced to donate yours, right? Or you over there. There's a bigger picture here than a woman's right to choose what to do with her own body. We need to start talking about it that way. And Joy's absolutely right. This is, in many ways, and of course, you can't dismiss the fact that this is also, as I've been hammering more and more, remember, this is theocracy in action. This is a joining. This is an attempt, and you know they're out front about it. They will tell any and all that their goal is to create a government that is run by some gang of religious divines to make us all live their religion. And no, it's not Christianity or Islam or anything else. It's that particularly virulent form of religious mania that is, it's actually no mainstream religion at all. It is merely the will to power with a Bible and a cross and a flag. Oh, wait, it's fascism. Because fascism always has a religious component. Got mit uns on the German belt plates? Anybody? The hyper-Christian Thomas J. Stonewall Jackson, who when asked in the 1860s what to do about the Union soldiers they were up against because they were very brave, yeah, Stonewall Jackson answered, kill them. Kill them all. Yeah. I've decided, Stephen New York says. If I can stand the itch, I'm going to let my beard grow out and then start wearing dresses with big frilly hats and parasols to my office. I just can't stand this shit where people get so many sads over what kind of clothing people wear. Oh, I know. I know. And there's other stuff, but I have a hard time just blowing past this one. This comes from the Daily Caller. And, of course, isn't that the white nationalist outfit, the white nationalist joint that's run by Testicle Toaster Tucky? Yeah. Because the Blaze is the Becker head. Talk about a headline to really get Emery and Marvelline all kinds of worked up. Top Biden health official, all pediatricians agree with castrating gender-confused children. Castrating children. Seems once again they've left the little girls out. Little cis girls. And some creature by the name of Dylan Houseman said, Assistant Secretary for Health Rachel Levine said in an interview released Friday, there is no medical debate about whether children who claim they are transgender should receive gender-affirming care. She said that because it's true. It is literally the standard of care in pediatrics, in pediatric endocrinology, pediatric psychology, pediatric psychiatry, because the alternative is to just let the little kids die. In an interview with NPR, Levine said the first openly transgender individual in American history, the first openly transgender individual in American history to serve in a Senate-confirmed position, said that the medical industry has reached a consensus on the value of gender-affirming care for transgender children. Levine made the remarks ahead of a speech in Texas Saturday, which was aimed at encouraging training physicians to promote that care to young transgender people. That's bullshit. They're not promoting it. They are providing it where necessary. But the Daily Caller can't deal with that. Instead saying, gender-affirming care is a euphemism for treatments to facilitate the gender transition of an individual, such as the prescription of puberty blockers, hormone therapy, or sex reassignment surgery. Those treatments can leave a child sterile in adulthood. Oh, shut up. And just by way of actually providing some facts on the matter, oh my God, this is so infuriating. You know what gender-affirming care is for a 5-year-old little trans girl or a 5-year-old little trans boy? It's letting them dress the way they identify. Sometimes they grow out of it. Many times they don't. It's counseling and therapy. There is no medication until several years later. And there are precisely zero transgender surgeries being performed on minors. None. A kid can't even get on actual hormones until like 16 at the earliest. And by the way, leave a child sterile? Well, that is why once you get to the point where you're going to do it, the first thing you do, if you're a trans girl, is you before the hormones even start, you go and freeze some sperm. Or if you're a little trans boy, you go and freeze some eggs so that then you can reproduce later. But, no, that things like that. Well, you can't put out facts to Emory and Marvelline. So instead you get, all pediatricians agree with castrating gender-confused children. No. But, you know, here I am trying to get the truth's shoes on while this idiocy has already gone around the world 50,000 fucking times. And the fact that there is a, support journalism button. That ain't journalism, y'all. By the way, since they are all terribly worried about grooming and pedophilia, let's check in Idaho. And Aaron von Ehlinger. Must be Prussian. He's got the fun. Aaron von Ehlinger was tried in Idaho over the course of 3 days and was convicted convicted of raping a 19-year-old intern last year after a dinner date. Von Ehlinger had, of course, been a member of the Idaho State Legislature and is, of course, good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it took the jury 11 hours before they came to their guilty verdict. And the trial was described as lurid. It got so awful that his victim fled the courtroom. And so, like I said, it went on for 3 days. With von Ehlinger saying that, a matter working at the state capitol, and we'd talk in the hallways and we'd text, and then we went to a steakhouse in Boise. I complimented her. I let her know how beautiful she was. She never once gave me any indication she didn't want to participate in this. And she performed oral sex on me for like 15 seconds. And then said, it's probably not a good night to have sex. And then he jacked off on her tummy. Oh my God. Just no. No. And that was his story. On the other hand, the prosecutors said that he, well, this sounds much more like a Republican. He told her he needed her to stop by his apartment after dinner to pick something up. Or he needed to. He needed to pop by his apartment. Had to pick something up. And then he picked her up and carried her into the bedroom.
Caveman.
And then, according to the evidence, he raped her, forcibly made her fellate him, and then held her down and on her stomach. Now, on the other hand, his pettifogger, the curiously named John Cox,
said, well, you know, he had a back injury. He was flown around in helicopters in the Army, and he had his back, he was injured in a helicopter crash, and he couldn't have lifted her and carried her like she says.
She went to the hospital, though. She was, well, brave. And as a result, the nurse was able to testify and said she didn't want to be there. She didn't want his penis anywhere near her mouth. And she also had a goose egg on her head from where he was slamming her head into the headboard of his bed. Thank God the Republican Party's out there protecting our family values, right? Sure. Oh, and let's check in with the latest from Mother Russia. You know, so many of these Republicans being so very much like Vlad Putin. Well, you know, Putin started his war against the innocent people of Ukraine claiming that he was denazifying them. And he did so even though President Vladimir Zelensky is, you know, the Jewish grandson of people who lived through the Holocaust, Jews. Well, that made things a little bit itchy for Sergei Lavrov. You remember Sergei Lavrov. He's the guy that the Republican Party invited personally to attend their little Clavering convention in Cleveland, Ohio, back in 2016. Remember? There is a special guest of the GOP, the then ambassador to the United States, Sergei Lavrov. And then it was old Sergei Lavrov who was in the Oval Office with Nitwit Nero, while Nitwit Nero was, you know, giving them state secrets. So recently, Sergei Lavrov gave an interview to an Italian television network named Zona Bianca, the White Zone. And in explaining why they would say that they were denazifying a country that had elected a Jewish president, Lavrov said to Zona Bianca, I could be wrong, but Hitler also had Jewish blood. That again. And then he continued and said, wise Jewish people say that the most ardent anti-Semites are usually Jews. Naftali Bennett, the president of Israel, hearing about this, said, using the Holocaust of the Jewish people as a political tool must cease immediately. That on the Israeli Day of Remembrance for the millions of Jews killed in the Holocaust.
Lavrov went on to say, yeah, the fact that Zelensky is Jew mean absolutely nothing. Wow. And over here, of course, there are bound to be Republicans, you know, Trump supporters. Well, yeah, that's the, yeah. Because you crow Nazis. Oh, my aching back. So this is, you know, this is where we are. And God, when I say this is where we are, what I mean is, well, let's go to Alaska. The Department of Justice issued a press release today announcing the conviction of Timothy Lobdell, 45-year-old dude bro. He also goes by the name of, wait for it, Filthy Fuhrer. No, really. Filthy Fuhrer. And he was already in prison. He's a prison gang leader, a white supremacist prison gang. And he, along with his associates, were convicted by the federal government of RICO conspiracy, murder in aid of racketeering, kidnapping, and assault. The DOJ announcing evidence presented at trial showed that Filthy Fuhrer, formerly known as Timothy Lobdell, formerly known, he actually got a legal name change, founded and led the 1488 gang. Huh, interesting that. The 14 words and the 88, the HH, he was already doing 19 years for trying to kill an Alaska state trooper. And apparently from inside the joint, told his gang members, the 1488 gang, that's so just so Nazi, to commit violent kidnappings and assaults in what he referred to as the free world outside prison. The members of the 1488 gang... Well, they love Nazi memorabilia, and they get a patch tattoo of an iron cross on a swastika, and they say things like, "The only currency we recognize is violence and unquestionable loyalty." The statement from the DOJ went on to say, "Trying to impose greater organization and structure with non-incarcerated members, Filthy Fuhrer believed that some members were defying the 1488 code of conduct and diminishing the power and influence of the gang. Filthy Fuhrer sent out a trusted lieutenant." I mean, if you're just talking to him casually, do you just call him Filthy? I don't know. "Sent out a trusted lieutenant with a list of directives. These directives culminated in the kidnapping and assault of two low-level gang members on April 2nd, 2017, and July 20th, 2017, and the kidnapping, assault, and murder of Michael Staten on August 3rd, 2017. The guilty verdicts today strike a significant blow to the highest levels of the 1488 gang. The Department of Justice and our law enforcement partners remain committed to combating and dismantling violent white supremacist gangs. And yet, somehow or another, the GOP is still a going concern." Oh, my God. And just not to put too fine a point on it, but back in 2018... reports came out showing that a Nazi group called Atomwaffen actively infiltrated active-duty military
And while the Republicans are worried about the transes grooming children, the fact of the matter is the neo-Nazis, you know, who vote Republican, are out there trying to groom children to become hateful little Nazis themselves. We saw it here when our kids were young and in school. It is horrifying. It is distressing. Oh, speaking of family values, let's check in with South Carolina, the home of American sedition. And in particular, let's check in with York County. York County, South Carolina, Stan, where 33-year-old Benjamin Ben Ignatowitz, no, really, Ignatowitz, middle name Morian, I guess. Benjamin Ben Ignatowitz, age 33, of York County, South Carolina, was taken into custody by the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, SLED, because, he beat the hell out of a kid. Yeah, I know. Child abuse. He beat the child on their bare bottom until it became severely bruised. The arrest warrant said that on the 27th day of March, 2021, Benjamin Ben Ignatowitz, chairman of the York County, South Carolina Republicans, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republican. Well, a minor child was at his residence. Okay, there's the first red flag. Letting minor children be around Republicans. Well, he said he was frustrated when he beat the kid. And when the cops showed up, he said, yeah, it had been a day. Then the cops showed him the picture of the beaten kid's bottom. And he said, based on that picture, I'd say it was probably excessive. Well, I've got a picture of him here. He's standing there smiling with his face full of teeth and got his flag pin on his lapel with the Merkin flag and the South Carolina Stan flag. He beat the child so badly that the charge itself carries the possibility of 10 years in prison. He'll never see a day behind bars. But here's an interesting little addendum that goes with the story. It was originally, the complaint was originally called in to the York County Sheriff's Office. But the York County Sheriff is one Kevin Tolson. And he, of course, is also a maggot. And he said he just couldn't do his job. He couldn't because he said, that's my chairman. I can't be investigating the chairman of my political party, even though I swore an oath to do exactly that without fear or favor. So he called the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, SLED, into it, and they took it over. Here's where it gets even better. We were talking about, what's his name, the asshole that wants to get rid of public schools, and yeah. Well, in addition to being chairman of the York County GOP, he's also been chairman of the board
at Riverwalk Academy. That's one of those private little academies that sprang up like toxic mushrooms after a spring rain all over the South in the wake of Brown versus Board of Education. They teach children from kindergarten through 10th grade in Rock Hill, South Carolina. His York County Republican's biography says he has two precious daughters along with his wife, Elizabeth. So the question remains, who did he beat the hell out of? And how many beatings did he turn a blind eye to at Riverwalk Academy since 2020? Boy, howdy, I bet you they don't teach no critical race theory at Riverwalk Academy. Of course, the children may come out of there with some lifelong trauma, but... And I saw this headline. Oh, thank you. Thank you to, I need to send out a thank you. Thank you to Don in BC. Thank you, Don. We are now down to $150 to go on the challenges. And that'll get our fundraising, if we can meet it all the way, that'll get the fundraising hole down to $600. For this first broadcast day of May 2022. Thank you, Don. No, I saw this headline, and it has to do with a soon-to-be-released memoir from former Defense Secretary Mark Esper. You know, now that they're out of office and now that the walls are maybe closing in a little bit on Nitwit Nero, suddenly people are eager to tell their side of the story. And so Mark Esper's new book contains a little something that just sort of rang a bell for me. One of my favorite novels is Joseph Heller's Catch-22. And I can't remember, maybe Horst can... Once he hears this, maybe he can tell me. I can't remember if it's Colonel Cathcart. Anyway, one of these pompous-ass generals, or colonels, or whatever, has an aide who is a major. Was either Dreidel or Cathcart. But at one point in time, in the book, he gets pissed off at Yossarian, the protagonist, the anti-hero of the thing, and he orders Yossarian to be shot. And his son-in-law, the major, says, "But Dad, you can't do that."
"Don't call me Dad."
"I can't? Why not?" "Well, because it's not legal. I'm a general, for God's sakes." Maybe there's an echo here of Patton slapping the soldier. I don't know. But he's clearly disgusted that he got all the way up to general. He can't order somebody to just be shot on his whim. The hell? Well, life imitates art. The book by Mike Esper, who took the job as Secretary of Defense under Donald Trump, and that calls his character into question plenty, is called A Sacred Oath. And so back in, and it contains the story that back in the first week of June 2020, with the Black Lives Matter protesting over the murder, the lynching of George Floyd, in full blossom, Nitwit Nero asked Mark Esper, the quote from the book says, "Surreal, sitting in front of the Resolute desk inside the Oval Office with this idea weighing heavily in the air and the president red-faced and complaining loudly about the protests underway in Washington, D.C. At which point, Nitwit Nero, channeling his inner Dreidel, I guess, said,
"Look, can't you just shoot them? I mean, just shoot them in the legs or something."
And Mike Esper, trying to portray himself as a hero, says, "The good news, this wasn't a difficult decision. The bad news, I had to figure out a way to walk Trump back without creating the mess I was trying to avoid." And, you know, thereby showing what an absolute paragon of political virtue he was. He didn't want to make a mess, but he had to get Nitwit Nero to understand that he just can't order people to be shot. Like, you know, as if Black Lives Matter were some random Palestinians being wasted in the occupied territories by the IDF. So, I'm inclined to believe it, aren't you? Nitwit Nero wanted to invoke the Insurrection Act and put the U.S. military on the streets and, you know, have them go all Kent State on Black Lives Matter protesters.
Can't you just shoot them? Shoot them in the legs or something.
Jesus God. And out of Georgia, we have a story of frantic text messaging between Mark Meadows and a person described as a high-ranking Georgia official. It came out because of the prosecutors investigating Nitwit Nero's efforts to rig the election in Georgia. Jordan Fuchs was the Deputy Secretary of State in 2020. As Nitwit Nero on the now infamous phone call said,
I just need you to find me some votes. Just need you to find me 11,000 votes.
Which caused loyal maggot Jordan Fuchs to begin texting for all he was worth to Mark Meadows, "Need to end this call. I don't think this will be productive much longer. Let's save the relationship." Because, you know, she didn't want to lose her career. And so then Mark Meadows says, and this was January 3rd, 2021. And Mark Meadows said, "You know, lawyers from both sides should get in touch real soon." To which Ms. Fuchs said, "Thank you. Wow." And, of course, the guy running for Senate, or governor, rather, David Perdue, senator at the time, back on December 29th, 2020, said, "I'm trying to set up this call with state legislature leaders and Rudy. I just want to make sure I'm doing what you and the president want." Trying to pass that buck. And, of course, Nitwit Nero, through his shenanigans and telling people not to early vote, not to absentee vote, well, he would make sure that Senator Sonny stopped being Senator Sonny, and we had the historic Senate election that gave us Senators Raphael Warnock and, oh God, where did his name go? The guy who beat Sonny Perdue. Sorry. It'll pop into my head in a minute. But it's not all happening here just in America. Up in Canada, there's a cue ball influencer by the name of Romana Didulo. And she refers to herself as the Queen of Canada. No kidding.
Ossoff, John Ossoff. Thank you, Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you. That was going to drive me bananas. You had Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff. So Romana DiDullo now says that no, really, Joe Biden asked her to mediate peace talks with Vlad Putin and Mother Russia. She posted a video. I address you today as your commander-in-chief and queen. To the Russian and American people, I address you as the mediator between the United States and Russia pertaining to the Ukraine crises. I've been requested by the commander-in-chief of the United States Armed Forces to act as the mediator between Russia and the United States. And she said she wanted her own plane. Her own plane would bear the flag of the Kingdom of Canada. She would be referred to as Queen Romana or QR1. And she wanted 13 to 15 staffers to travel with her. None of this is, of course, true. But the question is, how many Emerys, how many Marvelines, you know, of the Canadian varieties, will take that for freaking gospel? Really? No kidding. Oh, and by the way, with regard to Mike Esper, Esper equals fucking hero, Darlene in Connecticut says, and almost half this insane nation would elect Trump or help him steal the presidency for life in a heartbeat. This is one effed up country. Yeah, we are. It is frighteningly so. I don't know. So we're at the halfway point of the program. Got $150 to go to finish the challenges. That would be huge. Let's run over to the stress line and see who we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Tracy.
How are you?
Oh, it's a little warm here in the sauna, but I'll be okay.
Oh, hell. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was just looking at my car. I thought it was bird crap. It's just flower petals. So I just got my car washed. Okay, moving on.
All better.
So, I don't know where to start. So, I start with our mayoral debate last night, or what I learned in climate change panel.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up a little bit. You're breaking up a little bit.
No, because I'm breaking up because I'm out of breath because I was walking.
Oh, okay. Good for you.
You know. No. It's not that I was walking. Like, you know, I was just trying to get to the car
before
the kids got to the car. So, but anyway, I guess I catch my breath. So last night, for those of you who don't live in L.A., or even if you do live in L.A., like, so what? There was a mayoral debate last night. Colleen, pull up your mask. Anyhow, so it was, let's see, there's five candidates. Let's see, Shearer, four or five. I lose count. All men, except for one, black woman, Karen Bass. Now, let me just wait back
who,
up.
Who, by the way, is kind of a badass.
It's like she's kind of a badass, but I'm a little upset with her because of something that happened before the debate started. So I don't know if you know who Dr. Malina Abdullah is.
Not sure.
Okay, well, she is basically the founder of Black Lives Matter.
Yeah,
Los Angeles. And she is a professor at Cal State LA, where the debate was being held. Now, Cal State LA is a public institution. And she's also, I don't know if she's tenured, but she's been at that institution for 20 years. Now, she had been trying unsuccessfully, her and her students, to try to get tickets for said debate. And finally, they said, there's no tickets necessary. Just come. Now, so her and another black female professor, not from Cal State LA, but from a specific university, were at, you know, waiting for the event to start. And apparently it was at the TBI, which is the Pat Brown Political Institute or something, you know. This is on Cal State LA, you know, Institution about Political Science. Anyhow, so the chair or whatever of that institution saw Dr. Abdullah there, walks up to her and says, this is a ticketed event, even though she was told that, you know, just show up. Because, by the way, there was nobody in the audience. Okay? It was hardly anybody. So she basically ignored them. She's like, well, I'm a professor here. Been here for 20 years. He's like, go away. Guy. I'm pretty sure it's a white guy, but I'm not sure. Anywho, woo-doo-woo-doo-woo, goes on. Next thing, so he called campus police on it. And they, instead of just tapping her and kind of escorting her out, they forcibly, physically removed her, picked her up by under her shoulders and her feet, and removed her from the debate. It hadn't even started yet, but she was screaming for help. Not one person on the, you know, the candidates, including now, I haven't heard any reporting from Karen Bass's camp as of yet, but no one.
Uh-oh. That, Tracy must have lost her connection. That, I hadn't seen reporting on that, but I did see the business about the sheriff of L.A., who was trying to, what? And this guy's gross. Trying to intimidate a journalist. And of course he's Alex Villanueva. I'm not, but he's a nightmare. Well, let's run over to the stress line and check in with Scott in San Diego.
Hello?
Yes?
Okay, I'm on the Skype line.
Yes.
Well, you said the stress line.
No, I said Skype.
Oh, I heard stress.
Okay. Tracy was on, Tracy was on the stress line.
Or something wrong with my phone. It could be either. I mean, we don't know. Well, I want to tell you, Robin, Your place is secure. You are and will remain the little effing ray of sunshine.
Aren't I just?
With the fellow Robster today. See, it's good that I don't keep a revolver around here because I
now quit that.
20 minutes ago. Ah, is there nothing working in the world? I mean, see, if this were a music show. And I was a consultant flown in from a faraway place at high prices. I would have said, check your music mix there, Buster, because these are you can't do 10 weepy sappy songs in a row. You've got 11 it with a little bit of hope.
I don't know why we have to come out of an up tempo song and go into a dead dog dedication.
Well, I
get Don on the phone.
I'm sorry, and I don't mean to be a critic, because I am a fan of the show, but I'm telling you, I really, honestly, there for a while, was saying, God, I wish I had a gun. I wish I...
Agent Fred is listening, Scott. Don't say those kinds of things.
No, not for you, for me.
Don't say that either!
Well, anyway, that's not why I called. Do you remember offhand, some months ago, there was a news item that in the former Soviet Union, they had come up with their own version of a COVID vaccine. And there was a name like Glorious Vaccine or
Sputnik. Wonderful. Sputnik.
Sputnik. Okay. What does that mean? I don't even know what Sputnik means.
I don't either. But, you know, I renamed it Putenka.
Putenka. Okay.
Because it's been my position all along that it's just repurposed Putenka vodka from the warehouse that didn't move.
There you go. All right. Well, I've got a theory about the Russian vaccine. You know, all the talk on this side of the world about a secret microchip in every dose. The Russian vaccine probably did have a secret microchip in every dose, and I'll tell you why I say that.
Tell us, Scott. Tell us now.
And by the way, whoever was talking about birds earlier, birds aren't real. So I don't know what messed up Tracy's windshield, but it wasn't a bird.
Yeah, well, anyway. No, it's interesting you would bring that up because I don't know if you caught it, but 60 Minutes did a segment on birds aren't real.
Yeah, I was going to send that to you, but I figured somebody would.
And yes, I just found it incredibly ironic that we were talking about this 2-3 weeks ago, and, you know, apparently there's a 60 Minutes producer who listens to this program.
Well, they got to get good ideas from somewhere. I mean, come on. We have to start charging them, all these shows that pick up on our, you know, Horn family wisdom. But the Russian vaccine must have a chip in it. And one of the things that that chip can do has got to be tracking of Russian generals. How many Russian generals have been made all not alive-like?
All unalived? Something like 13.
Yeah, and they sent the big head general over there, or going to send him.
Yeah, the butcher of Syria.
To look around and find out what the fuck's going on. Why are we losing, generally speaking, but why are we losing all of our top brass? And on the news, when they were talking about the number of generals who have died, just unless you were paying attention, you would have missed it. The newscaster or whatever said, you know, the Ukrainians are being helped with American intelligence. And I'm thinking, well, that could be anything. And then I thought about it. Maybe we're giving them the frequency to tune in on these chips that are in the Russian vaccine that the generals took so that they could know where to aim the missiles or the stingers or the drones or whatever. I could be onto something, or I could be, as I sometimes am, full of it.
Or it could be little of each.
Well, maybe. But you got to figure that there must be some way, seriously, that these people are being tracked, because that almost defies military odds. I'm not a war buff, you know, as far as the intricate history of the various wars over the centuries. But I don't know that many generals in this short of a time span have been done in combat. Maybe we have some war historians.
I think you're right. And the conventional wisdom explanation given for that, Scott, is that the command and control structure of the Russian military is absolutely nothing like ours. Namely, they don't have a non-commissioned officer corps, the equivalent of our sergeant, you know, the various kinds of sergeants and chiefs in the Navy.
Like anything below a captain in the Army, let's say.
No, it would be actually in the Army, it would be anything below Second Louis.
Okay, all right, that makes sense.
And since they don't have those, that means that the generals have to get closer to the fighting.
Ah, okay.
Because they have to manage the colonels and the majors and the captains and the Louis and the Second Louis or whatever their, you know, whatever their command and control structure is. Because once you get below lieutenant or whatever, it's just kind of leaderless grunts.
So is it sort of a carryover from the old Soviet system, top-down ruling?
Apparently so. I mean, they didn't see any need to fix it.
It's too bad if you want to have a good military, but in this case, it's pretty good because it's helping the Ukrainians.
You know, so we've gone from the rape army. Now there's reports that they're using, as Joy in Ann Arbor pointed out, there's reports that they're using captive Ukrainians to provide the blood supply for their wounded soldiers. I mean, this is truly a barbarian army. Not to say that that you know armies generally are operating by the Marcus of Queensberry rules, but you know, shaving the heads of female soldiers and raping them repeatedly and continuously is beyond the pale.
Yeah, but it's war, just generally speaking, is brutal, but it seems to be especially nasty as practiced by Putin's troops.
Well, it's the current Russian version of what the Germans called, I think, Schrecklichkeit, which is basically, and you see kind of echo of it. You remember the speech of Colonel Kurtz in Apocalypse Now?
Yeah, it's been a while. But
the horror, the horror.
Yeah, the tone of it. Yeah,
and the horror, and so. You know, the theory that the military that controls the horror in war will eventually be the victor.
Because that's a very, very powerful card to play. But then you run the risk of being brought up on war crimes charges. But that, I guess they don't think about that.
Well, no, because they don't expect to be caught, because as a nuclear state, Russia figures, and you know, basically it's the same calculus we've engaged in the past, namely that, you know, war crimes tribunals are for countries that lose wars and are strong or are weak enough not to be able to defend themselves.
Yeah.
Russia thinks that they will not be held to account. Just like, you know, we don't participate in the International Criminal Court. We nixed that during the W administration, if I recall correctly.
I thought it was further back than that. Well, maybe not. Yeah, I get confused sometimes with timelines and stuff like that, but I don't know. It's unpleasantness, and it's even, I can't imagine being there and being a person in Ukraine, being bombarded and having to leave and go into a neighboring country. And I mean, it's just barbaric and it's senseless and it's mindless. Maybe it's not hopeless, but there's going to be a lot of slogging going on between now and some sort of outcome. And I try to be a concerned human being about it. But on the other hand, how much of it can you deal with?
Or do something about, you know, all we can do is follow it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But now there was a thing on, I guess it was CBS Sunday Morning. These new teeny tiny drones that they've got, that they're manufacturing as fast as they can do it. That's the other thing I wondered about that I wanted to bring up. To the extent there's been any improvement in job numbers, okay, or economy being boosted or whatever, how much of that is armaments industry? I know that we don't get all of our stuff from this country, but a fair amount of it, of the war materiel, comes from our, you know, from within our shores. But this is a company that.
Well, war is good business.
Well, yeah.
And when we're sending, when we're sending literally billions upon billions upon billions of dollars worth of armaments to Ukraine, it's not like they were just laying around. The stockpiles have to be maintained.
Yeah. And move out your old stock to make room for new is pretty much the mantra. But this thing was really, I forget what it's called, I think a switchblade Somebody can look it
up.
I think
it's kind of a backpack drone that can, it's got a decent range. And
you know, one and done. I mean, you can't use it more than once, but if you use it right, once is enough. And it's particularly effective with, like, large military vehicles or tanks or things of that nature. And that's, you know, it's like the, you've never been out here, but the Interstate 5 that runs up and down the length of the West Coast during certain times of the day and or night is bumper to bumper. All you need to do is knock out a couple of those Russian tanks on the road into Ukraine, and you've got yourself, you know, how's the traffic looking, Don? Well, I'll tell you, it's the best down there on Ukrainian I-5. You know, your Russian tanks and mechanical birds and what have you, and we just don't know what to do. But you get what I'm saying.
Oh, I do. I do. And it's like I equated last week. You know, we talk about the shootings, shooting after shooting after shooting after shooting. And it seems like some answers should be available to us. It's one of those moments when the entirety, well, not the entirety, but something north of 70% of the American people want some level of common sense gun reform. And, well, no matter what the people want, a significant enough number of Republicans, that would be all of them, say, fuck y'all. Plain and simple.
Yeah, but if you were getting, you know, choking-inducing wads of cash from the NRA and other types of lobbying efforts, you'd probably pay more attention to them than you would the populace, too. I mean, you wouldn't, but
there was that Princeton study of some years back that meticulously analyzed from a statistical approach the fact that what popular opinion is has almost nothing to do with the laws that get passed in this country. It's what corporate America wants. It's what the political class wants.
Well, it is true, but in other words, until corporate signs on, nothing ever gets done, no matter what the populace says.
Right. It's like a message that I just got from Kevin up in Massachusetts a little bit ago. He pointed out, he said, I just saw a new Lowe's commercial. Everyone in it had a mask on, even in the garden center. Corporate cover your ass?
No, Old Spot, I would think.
No. New.
Well, are we sure, though? Well, I'm not going to doubt Kevin. But what I'm saying is sometimes they'll use the footage from a spot that's been running for quite a while with new audio. Unless it's, well, I guess with the mask on, you could put in new audio and the lips wouldn't necessarily have to match. I'll have to see the ad. I don't. Or maybe it is a responsible corporation. There's always that. I mean,
well, you know, maybe they're, look, corporate branding is a thing. And the fact of the matter is, Home Depot is a disgustingly right-wing, anti-labor, anti-worker, maggot outfit. And so maybe they're trying to put, and, you know, I'm sure Lowe's is no gang of, you know, corporate kumbayas, but maybe they're trying to create some ideological space between the two. I mean, frankly, I know how I'd respond. Oh, look, I've got a lower chance of catching some disease that might kill me if I have to go to a big box store and I go to Lowe's. And by the way, my best hopes and thoughts go out to our buddy John in Central PA. I didn't get all the way through because I started running my little yap, but he at the beginning of the program, when I was talking about, when I mentioned you know, J.D. Mandel. John said, where'd it go? There it is. He added, also, I tested positive for COVID-19 today after experiencing flu-like symptoms. Damn it. Do everything you can do. I hope you don't have any symptoms. But he said he had flu-like symptoms, so that's kind of out the window. I hope they pass quickly.
How is John with two shots and booster situation?
He didn't mention.
Have you gotten your second
booster? No.
I haven't either, but I got to go to the, when I'm out doing errands tomorrow, I'm going to swing by CVS and get me my jab. I think it's been long enough now. Yeah, I just... Did you see any of the White House correspondence proceedings Saturday night?
I saw clips. I mean, I thought there were some pretty good burns in there.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, Trevor Noah.
We had a horrible plague, and then we had 2 years of COVID.
Yeah. I wonder who writes for those things. I guess Trevor Noah has his own staff of writers, but
right.
Who does for a long time?
Oh, the Chuck Todd dig was beautiful.
Oh yeah.
I would have asked a follow up question, but I know he doesn't know what those are.
Yeah. I thought of you actually when that line came across my TV. I said, "Well, I hope Robin hears this."
Yeah, John. Well, John tweeted at me and said, "Now I know why you call him Joke Toad."
Yeah. But years ago...
God, he's just so bad at the job.
They're used to... Well, yeah, I know. And why do I watch it? I don't always watch the whole thing. It depends on what the topic is. But how can someone be that fucking clueless and have a national broadcast?
Well, because NBC's editorial department, you know, and it flows, and he's part of it, are terminally addicted to access. And if they ask a mean question, they won't come back. I mean, it's literally that simple.
Well,
it's enough to drive you absolutely bananas.
Who holds the record? For a long time, Robert Dole was the winner of the number of appearances on Meet the Press, but he may have been surpassed by McCain, or McCain ran a close second. But what I'm saying is, they're never at a loss for visitors to the program at any given time.
No,
everybody, and
I frankly think that that's because the Republicans who love to get on camera, they generally have media staffs that for some reason or another are better at this than Democrats.
Yeah, that's true.
Of course, apparently Joe Manchin has a fantastic Republican media manager, because, you know, you don't want to be between the most dangerous place in the world is between Joe Manchin and a camera.
Well, let me ask you regarding Chuck Todd. I think we're in agreement as far as his particular talents that he brings to the show, or lack thereof. What was your take on Tim Russert?
I didn't think he was great.
Was he better than Todd, though?
Oh, better. Well, Tim Russert was better than Disco Dave Gregory and Joke Toad combined.
Yeah, I kind of thought you'd say that.
You know what? It does. It astonishes me that he has the job he has. I mean, and this may seem liberal biased, but just in terms of work ethic, you could replace Joke Toad with Rachel Maddow, and it would be a 3,000,000% improvement, because she does know what a follow-up question is, and sometimes she actually doesn't give a fuck if the person comes back.
That's not a bad idea, Robin. And since starting this month, May, she's only going to be on MSNBC one night a week, Mondays. Maybe they ought to think of moving her in. How are Chuck's numbers?
I honestly don't know. But I just get so tired of tuning in and saying,
And today's topic, Joe Biden sucks, but how can he suck as much as he sucks? They didn't do that shit with Nitwit Nero. They bowed and they scraped. In particular on that program. And they'd have on the Peter Navarros and the Mark Meadowses and the Mick Mulvaneys. And, yeah. And you know, they'd bite, the, you know, they'd come on the show and bite the head off a live chicken. And Joke Toad would sit there and pretend it was all perfectly normal.
Well, but, you know, for those of us who like the Sunday morning shows, ever since Bob Schieffer left Face the Nation, I can't watch that show. I never could abide George Stephanopoulos on ABC This Week or whatever the hell they're calling it. And so it automatically defaults to Chuck Todd. And I, you know, it's just a tradition.
And well, the Sunday version is the marquee version. You haven't lived for just pure white guy mediocrity. You haven't lived until you've caught Meet the Press Daily.
Oh, yeah, that's why I don't watch it. I've seen it.
Oh.
I know what you're talking about.
Oh, the stupid, it burns as us.
Oh, yes, it certainly does. Ooh, gives me the heebie-jeebies. But I don't even know what CNN or MSNBC offer. I know that CNN has a program early on Sunday mornings, which is kind of Meet the Press-ish, but I can't remember the name of it, and I don't know what time it is or who the host is. Maybe somebody knows.
Well, you know, Steve in New York just pointed something out. The better question is this: who are the good journalists? I don't know of anyone, honestly. The for-profit media sees politicians as celebrities, so if they can't get the political equivalent of the Kardashians, they don't get the ratings. You know, no, I think there are good ones. The guy who does Way Too Early on MSNBC.
Oh yeah, he's with the magazine.
Jonathan Lemire. He's not terrible. Ari Melber.
What do you
good.
Think of? I can't think of her name. She's a black lady that used to be at PBS, and she just started at NBC.
I don't know. I was thinking Tiffany Cross is really good. She's at MSNBC, The Cross Connection.
When is that on? I've never heard of
that. That's a weekend show, yeah.
Yeah, I usually don't look on the weekends. Now, I do watch Dateline sometimes, old episodes of Dateline, just to see how crazy people are. And it gets me centered for a new week, you know.
It's your crazy vaccine.
Well, not only that, but it reminds me that as bad as I could ever be, I've never killed anybody and buried them under grandma's garage, you know.
Oh, and speaking of buried, I just saw a notification come across.
Yeah.
From the Los Angeles Times.
This is not going to fuck up Easter for millions of Christians, is it?
That's over.
Sorry, kids. No Easter Bunny.
Las Vegas police have made an announcement.
Oh, dear.
And, you know, Lake Mead is at historically low levels because climate change and drought, and maybe we ought not be building great big energy-sucking cities in the middle of the desert, but...
You think?
All the love in the world to our Vegas friends. I mean, it's just kind of hard to do in a burning planet. So, Lieutenant Ray Spencer with the LVMPD said that the lake levels are so low.
How low are they?
Thank you, God. Thank you for knowing to do that. Well, they found a barrel sticking out of the mud.
Oh, my God. Oh, God. I know where this is going.
Is that you, Mr. Hoffa?
Yeah.
Boaters found it about 3:00 yesterday, but when they opened it up, there were skeletal remains
oh dear.
In the barrel.
Yeah.
And a Teamsters necklace?
And, well, no, based on personal items found in the barrel, police think it has been at the bottom of the lake since the 1980s. I don't know if that means the victim was wearing a members-only jacket or what. But here's the, you know, this is just kind of a grim reminder that the Las Vegas police know where they are. Lieutenant Spencer said, it's going to take an extensive amount of work to identify the victim. And I'd say there's a very good chance as the water level drops that we're going to find additional human remains.
Oh, yeah. And back when the lake was really healthy and thriving, it was a pretty safe bet that the water level would never go to a point where there would be mud in which you would find barrels. So climate change has fucked it up for organized crime and body disposal.
Well, and you know, the bigger story is just how bad it's getting. Water levels at Lake Mead have gotten so low that what this news story says was a water valve not seen since 1971.
Jesus.
Was exposed, and that valve can no longer draw water, according to the Southern Nevada Water Authority, because of the low water levels. And they went on to say, the Colorado River Basin is experiencing the worst drought in recorded history. Since 2000, snowfall and runoff into the basin have been well below normal. These conditions have resulted in significant water level declines at major system reservoirs, including Lake Mead and Lake Powell.
Well, that reminds me, just what you're describing, back in the 90s, PBS ran a three-part or four-part series called Cadillac Desert. Did you ever see that? I know I've recommended it to you. I think it's on YouTube, or you can find it online somewhere. Cadillac Desert, like the car and the word desert.
Yeah.
And it's all about the damming and the tapping into and the diversions of, I believe, the Colorado River. And there may be another river that's mentioned. It's been a while since I've seen it. And we have Army Corps of Engineered to the point that rivers don't run anymore unless we say go. And I understand that it's helpful in some ways, but you might create a reservoir or a lake or whatever, so it's helpful in that way. But for every benefit, there's always going to be a downside.
Oh, the story of the people who were abused, dispossessed by the creation of the lake system along the Tennessee River by the Tennessee Valley Authority.
Well, that too.
And then the damming system on the Missouri. There were encampment sites of the Corps of Discovery that were inundated, and the same too for thousands of acres of indigenous land, like the Mandan people, who incidentally took in Lewis and Clark and treated them like human beings. Oh, and by the way. Matt in San Francisco says Chris Hayes is decent. I agree. I like Chris a lot.
I like Chris.
And the person, thank you, Jack, in Shreveport, the person you were referring to is Yamiche Alcindor.
Yeah, Yamiche Alcindor. I couldn't think of her name to save me. You know, I wonder if maybe she won't end up in Rachel's slot those other 4 days, because she's pretty damn good. Maybe she's more of a street reporter and wants to focus on that.
Well, I mean, she was before she. I mean, this was a few years ago. Her first foray in TV came after being in print journalism for a while, and eventually rising to the level of the New York Times.
Well, I didn't know she worked there.
Oh yeah, I saw her byline on a number of occasions.
I knew she was at PBS for a while on the NewsHour, and occasionally, I think for a while they put her on what is that Friday night show, Washington Week.
Yeah.
Didn't she host that for a while?
I'm not sure. By the way, Matt in San Francisco added Rachel. I think I'll ask my boss if I can just work Mondays for the same pay because I have other stuff to do. I'll let you know how it goes. And then adds water. I'm no genius, but wouldn't it make sense to build desalinization plants up and down California since we're in a never-ending drought and the sea level's rising? Yeah, it would. And those are energy intensive, and, you know, maybe you could tie them into a solar and wind-driven grid, and my God, the next thing you know, it's the future. I mean, the Saudis build desalinization plants for all they're worth.
Yeah. I think part of the problem was the energy cost of it, but the other part of it was the cost of
It is energy intensive. It is extremely energy intensive. Oh, and by the way, I need to make an announcement for everybody trying to get in on the stress line. I've got Tracy back, so if you're dialing into the stress line and having no luck, that's because somebody's already on it, and I can't take more than one call at a time on the stress line. And with that having been said, let me add Tracy back into the conversation. Hey, Tracy.
Hey. I thought you forgot about me. I've been sitting here.
No, I
love you, Scott, but goddamn, do you never shut up?
Well, no, not often. When I'm asleep, sometimes.
I doubt that. You probably talk in your sleep.
Well, according to my ex, I would laugh in my sleep. I don't know why. I don't know what the hell I was laughing at. So that's not
birds. How you doing, dear?
On your windshield. That's because birds aren't real.
Well, no. It was flower petal. But from
it
the
was
distance,
what?
I'd like to let this flower petal. Petal?
Oh,
flower?
Okay.
Petal?
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't bird.
And it wasn't bird crap. So, no, I thought it was from the distance. I'm like, none of them. I just got this car washed and blah, blah, blah. So, anyway, I did not. I was just talking away. I had no idea that I had lost the call. So, what was the last thing you heard?
Well, we were talking about what happened at the debate, and in the interim, our pal Shorty in L.A. Sent me the tweet. She wrote, "Today I attempted to watch the mayoral debate held on the campus where I've taught as I waited for it to where I've taught for 20 years. As I waited for it to start, the white PBI director called the police on me. He and each of the candidates watched as I was brutally removed."
Yep. And there's video.
Some ugly shit.
There is absolutely video. Say what?
So that's some shit.
Yes, it is. And, you know, like I said, the fact, like I said, Karen Bass, it has my support. But her and Dr. Abdullah, they're tussling because, like I said, during the debate, all the male candidates, you know, more police, more police, 1,500, whatever. And because I didn't hear if Karen Bass actually said more police, but apparently she's at odds with people like Dr. Abdullah and other progressive leaders in L.A., because she's also calling for more police, but only 250. So I guess that's supposed to, you know, say. But the problem is, like I said, my issue is if it's that she, like I said, I haven't heard anything from her as to, you know, as far as being outraged by how another black woman was treated, or whatnot, or have you? I will know tomorrow.
And of course, the Republican in Democrat, the Republican billionaire in Democrat drag has been as quiet as a graven image, right?
Right, all of them. Like I said, no. Like I said, I have yet to hear about anybody, you know. But I don't give a rat, you know, to cookies about what those other fools are going to say. My issue is whether Karen Bass steps up and said something about what happened, because black woman. But so that aside, to the debate, like I said, I believe there's five candidates, four men, three white, one Latinx brother, and then there's Karen Bass. So you have
They were all on the stage. And so one of our HL7 ABC, you know, a Disney subsidiary, hosted the debate. And so we got, oh, yeah, and we got the black man. So I don't think he said anything either. I'm like, wow. But anyway, so here's the border. So we have Mark, I can't think of his name, the brother that's the nighttime news reporter on ABC7. And then we have, next to him, we have Rick Russo. Next to him, the other white guy, I can't think of Basquiano, I think. Next to him, Kevin De Leon. That's his redneck brother. And then next to him, Mark Fuhrer, he's this L.A. city attorney. And then at the end, Karen Bass.
Of course, at the end.
The last, at the very end, furthest away from, you know, Drax. And so I'm like, okay, that's problematic, you know. But so what happened after that, you know, back and forth, but Karen Bass, because if you've seen any of Rick Caruso's ads, which are just, you know, these self-gratifying, you know, pools of crap, he goes on and on about how much he helps the city and but, you know, city, you know, local government is corrupt, and he's going to do everything he can to, you know, in homelessness and the
I'm watching the video here, and it's just ridiculous. It's not like it was right. It's not like it was a packed house.
There was nobody there, from what I understand. So he goes on, you know. So they're going to debate, because one of the things he talks about is, you know, what he's going to do for homelessness. And as you know, he's a billionaire real estate developer. So Karen Bass, being the badass
I just went down the Twitter thread, and it's getting it. Apparently, I just went down the Twitter thread, and apparently she gave an interview to KBLA.
Yeah. Okay. KBLA. That's the station. So what did she say? Tell me.
Well, she just said talking with DI Prima Radio on KBLA about the violent way in which campus police removed me from the LA mayoral debate yesterday.
Oh, yeah, yes. I listened to that this morning, yes. Yes. She, you know, but again, like I said, I still haven't heard anything from Karen Bassett. So that kind of, you know, put a little damper
and of course the thread on it is just full of little white trolls.
Oh, it's horrible. It's the trolls. I saw one the other day. This was before her interview with Dominique DeCrema, who, by the way, is Amiri Baraka's daughter. I think I told you that.
Yeah, right.
But, she, before her interview, I saw this thread on her where she, you know, tweeted what happened. And, of course, people were, well, it's a ticketed event. Why were you there? Black Lives Matter, a bunch of thugs, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, oh, I mean, I don't get in Twitter fights anymore. It's just juvenile and pathetic. But
yeah,
here's some guy, and you know, in the old days, if you had a, you know, 8-digit number following your name on Twitter, it was a pretty good guess that you were a bot.
And, oh, really?
Yeah. Because it would just, you know, like, you know, let's say your name is Mark. Well, this is the 14,333,337,488th Mark, or something like that. But
gotcha.
You know, you were asked to leave, and like an adult, you should have, but you chose to make a scene. So what have happened was all on you. All they did was their job. You should have had a ticket. And the urge was
right.
So, the urge was so strong to respond and say, "You're absolutely white."
I don't know what. No, it's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. But like I, you know, I don't know if you heard, because I don't know what's happening with my phone. But Dominique Crema. Mary Barack's daughter.
Yes.
And her brother is the mayor of Newark, New Jersey. Yet another progressive.
And by the way, Shorty in LA points out, Dr. Abdullah on the video is screaming, "You're hurting me."
Yes, you're hurting me. And, well, actually, of course, you know, the Black Lives Matter and other people did their best. Apparently there was a trans sister there that put her body on the line to keep them from hurting Dr. Abdullah any more than they were hurting her. And she, you know, thanked her. She's like, "I don't know your name, sis, but thank you." Because it could have been a whole lot worse.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe that. If the cameras weren't rolling, they might have knelt on her neck for 9.5 fucking minutes.
Well, but remember, this was in the back of the auditorium, and the cameras are facing the stage.
Yeah.
So, other than the cameras, people had, you know, this would have gone unreported. Not that it would
make a difference in a free speech kind of argument, but she wasn't sitting there holding up a sign. She wasn't blocking, because basically she was sitting in the first row after the cameras, the TV cameras.
No, she was in the back. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. The cameras are in the very back. She's in the next row. She wasn't holding up a sign. She wasn't blocking anybody's view.
Nope, nope.
She wasn't chanting. She wasn't engaging in civil disobedience.
Exactly.
And it was in a public space.
It was a public space at a school where she is a professor. She at one point was the chair of the Pan African Studies department. That part.
Well, what do you, now, is she tenured?
I don't know if she's tenured. That I do, because I think if she were, she would have said something in her tweet, you know, "I've been there for 20 years. I'm like, I can go." That she's not tenured, but, you know, they might not tenure her just because of who she is. But, you know, Dr. Melita, she has so many irons in the fire that it wouldn't, you know, she got fired or whatever, but if they even tried to do anything about that,
it's like something Darlene said a little bit ago. This country really feels like it's just falling to pieces. I got another story here. Talk about being forcibly removed. Well, this in a good way. The person in question is named Christopher Alexander Morgan. Happened at Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport on April 22nd. A Delta flight landed. He had been in first class, and cops were waiting for him because he had spent the flight using anti-gay slurs on one of the flight attendants, refused to follow directions, and then threw a glass of ice and an onboard telephone at the flight attendant.
Oh, lovely.
And he used the F word and in a non-affirming sort of not reclaiming it way, queer. You know, kind of the way it was used with me a couple of months ago. He reclined his seat all the way back and refused, and he was in first class, of course. Wouldn't put on his seat belt at takeoff. Then he ordered a drink, and then he wanted a second drink, and the flight attendant said, why don't you have a pop? And in his own words, he said that he's homophobic, and it's possible he could have been intimidating to the flight attendants. He said that his homophobia may have caused his temper towards the flight attendant to escalate, and he admitted that he called the flight attendant a queer. So wait a minute. Holy shit. His homophobia is his defense?
I guess so.
I can't help it. I'm homophobic. Well, I just have to use the... I get upset. I just use them words.
Does it say how old this fellow is?
I didn't know.
Oh. I was going to say, lucky for him, there's no longer a Trans World Airways because... well, I just, you know... But, see, there's no excuse. How was he with the mask? Did he put up...
We don't have to wear masks on planes anymore.
We don't have to wear masks on airplanes anymore, Scott.
No, I mean, was he poking fun at people who did masks? Because you've got to figure...
No, he didn't. No, he was just... he was just being a homophobic POS. And he got angry when the flight attendant suggested that he not have a second drink.
And there was a reception committee waiting for him.
Yes.
At the arrival.
And that's the
gate.
Thing.
Well,
that's the thing. He was flying first class. You know, when you fly first class, you get an actual glass. And he threw the glass of ice at the flight attendant.
That's the problem.
Glass and all.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Well, see...
That's assault with a deadly weapon in my book.
Oh, yeah. Now, the people who met him at the gate, did they take him to Burger King or did he go straight to court?
Yeah, well, there's always that question.
That's getting so you can't go out anywhere anymore.
Well, Tracy, I wanted to let you know. You got a note from Jude. A special hello to hear.
I did.
Yeah, you get a special hello to Tracy and hearing her voice. Concerns bleed out onto all of us, and the injustices occurring, aligning with you and the woman who was removed while being hurt. Graduation is close, and excellent in your progress towards your master's degree.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Are you Are you KIT, keep it together, Kit?
Oh, I mean, I am, of course, so far behind on everything, but I am kind of close to catching up. I am just, I'm just trying my head above water, and finish up these last couple of classes. I just realized. You know, because I'm sick. The only class that matters this semester is my science class. All the rest of them, I was just, they have nothing to do with my degree, have nothing to do. So even if I screwed up on all of them, which I will not, but it will not keep me from walking. As long as I pass my science course, and which I'm working on, I will still graduate. You know, I have to realize that I don't need to have a 4.0 every semester. And just, and at this point, and I'm already accepted into grad school. So I don't care. I mean, I care, but I don't. Does that make any sense? And I gotta realize that I'm good. My acceptance into grad school is not provisional.
No, you're
it's
in.
It's a done deal.
You're in.
So it's like, just, you know, and so far I have an A in the lab. I have a B plus in the lecture. I think there's one class that I might be getting a C in, and that's a one unit class. So I could really give it to him. And so I'm good.
That's wonderful. And all the party planning is coming along swimmingly?
Say again?
And the party planning's coming along well?
The party, okay, so I sent out a email yesterday to the people that have yet to RSVP or just, respond yes or no, and also to the people that have said maybe. And I'm like, yo, y'all, I know everybody's busy. You know, no, I just, something I said, I'm busy, I know everybody's busy, but with that said, I would appreciate if you would take a moment out of your very hectic schedule to just fucking RSVP. Because it's like, it takes a second to say yes, to say no. And, you know, at this point, I don't want to see maybe. It's either yes or no. Because this is a catered event. You know, I need to know if I need to have, at this point, I think 70 people have RSVP yes, which is fine. I would be fine with just the 70. But it's like, I need to know, because I need to know if I need to have more tables, more chairs, what have you. But it's just, I think it's just inconsiderate for people not to RSVP. Especially people, it's like, dude, it's not like, you know, Timmy's, you know, first grade, kindergarten graduation, or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, this is a bit, well, hell, there's a shit ton of logistics going into this.
Right. I mean, but the bottom line is, this is 38 years in the making. And if you, the hesitancy in not RSVP makes me wonder, well, how much do you really care about me? Because the majority of the people who are, as soon as I sent out the invitation, RSVP either yes, right away, or no. And with the no's, they're like, oh my God, I cannot believe this is happening. I wish I could be there, but whatever, whatever, whatever. But they responded quickly. Simple. Yes or no. And then there's the maybe. Still kind of makes me
crazy,
but still,
yeah,
you know, but at least they responded something. But it's just the people, especially my person, because I get e-bike. So when you send out an e-bike, it'll say, you know, delivered, viewed, not viewed. And it's the people who viewed the invitation who have not responded. Those are the ones that are really pissing me off. Because it's like, you saw the invitation. You opened the invitation up. And I sent out these invitations, I don't know, back in March?
Yeah.
Seriously, y'all. Seriously. Because from what I understand, I don't go to a lot of places. But when I'm invited to something, first of all, I feel like you took the time to, you know, you thought enough of me that you wanted me, you're having an event, you thought enough of me to say, I really want Tracy at this event. So, I'm going to RSVP either way. But the fact that I've been invited is to me, it's like, you know, how kind, a kind gesture. So do the same in response. Like you said, responding will even click. It's like, just answer the goddamn. But like I said, the thing is, it's just upsetting that there are people the other day or texted her because she won't answer the phone. And I said, Auntie, you know, just want to know if you're still coming to the graduation. Woo 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 woo. And she's like, oh, it's too soon to tell.
Oh wow, that's just a little bit passive aggressive.
Just a little, you know, because the thing is, this aunt does not have a car. She, you know, and I was gonna, you know, I need to know if you're coming so I can arrange for transportation. Because I want you there and I don't want you on the bus all the way from LA to the Valley. That's just not going to work. That's not going to happen. Because the thing is, who does my wife work for? She works for Yellow Cab. I just have to tell her where, who I want picked up, and she will have a cab at their house whenever they're ready to come out here to pick them up, and a cab. Oh, real simple, and it won't cost them a dime. You know, this is something that I actually budgeted for. So, again,
it makes things it makes things harder than they should otherwise be.
This is not. I mean, I have Greg. There's three different things going on. On the 15th, so I had like three different invitations. On the 15th, we have Black Grad. And on the 21st, we have the actual commencement. And like I said, I have a certain amount of tickets for the people who are actually physically going to be at the commencement. And then we have the viewing party slash So the thing is, you know, I have given up on people. I just, like, I'm going to send out a general message next week about who's just coming to the brunch and who's just coming to and who's coming to the viewing party. You know, I mean, again, I know there's a lot going on, but still, there's a lot going on. And I've been very clear about, you know, just let me know what's going on. And today, we have a new chair of the Africana Studies Department. And so we finally actually, looks like she's just running, trying to run things the way it should have been run or whatever. I don't know what is going on other. It's kind of a hot mess. But anyway, so they sent out this glorious newsletter. And on the newsletter, it has a listing. Because the Africana Studies Department is a very small department. A list of all the graduating seniors in Africana Studies. Guess whose name wasn't on the list?
Oh, no.
And I know two other people that are graduating seniors, and their name was not on the list either. So I called the department, and I say, yo, can I get an understanding as to why my name was not on the list? And they're like, oh, my God. And I said, there's a couple of other people who I know are graduating seniors, and their names are not on the list either. So I had those people call. And then the girl who's my party planner, she graduated fall 2021, and her name wasn't on the list either. So, fortunately,
that seems kind of egregious.
Kind of? I'm sorry, I was yelling.
That seems a lot egregious.
Especially for Brionica. Because Brionica, I didn't really do much. Well,
because of my schedule and stuff, I didn't participate in a lot of stuff. But Brianna was head of Black House. I mean, she has done so much for the Africana Studies Department. And for her name not to be on that list was truly a slap in the face. So, like I said, I had all these, because, you know, and so they called me and said they're going to resend, you know, they're going to fix it and send it out to the Black Studies, you know, majors, resend it to the majors and minors. I said, wait a minute. Why are you just sending it to the major and minors? Why are you not resending it to everybody that you sent it to? Because there's plenty of people that you sent that newsletter to that know me and are probably wondering why the hell my name wasn't on the goddamn list. I didn't cuss. That was very gracious. But I was just like, why are you just sending it to them? But you need to resend it to everybody that you sent it to. Are you kidding me?
You didn't go all Sam Jackson and did, why is my name not on this list?
No, I put on my three. You know, I did Karen. I did a Karen. A Sam asked me for the mask. I did not ask to speak for the mask. It's like, why are you just gonna, you know, because the thing is, you said that to all these people, 10 of which on that email list I know personally. And again, they're probably going, why wasn't Tracy Porter's name? Because they all know I'm a graduating senior. And they're probably going, why the hell wasn't Tracy Porter's name on there? Because I said it was, because see, I like I said, Black Brad is Sunday, May 15th, the Sunday after Mother's Day. And for the Africana Studies majors, they're having a reception grad, which is something. So my name was on that list because I got the invitation to, you know, to RSVP. As to whether or not I'm coming. And guess what? As soon as I got it, I RSVP. But so she's like, I don't know what happened, but you're obviously graduating. You're obviously on, you know, because she was on the she's the one that did the email to announce the Africana Studies Department reception before Black Grad. So I'm like, so what happened? So apparently there were two lists, and there was the older list and the updated list. I was on the updated list, but whoever was in charge of sitting out the list, the older list and not the updated list. So that's what happened. But it was a bit off putting. Because I was just like, I've waited too long and worked too hard for my name not to be. And the way they did it is gorgeous. They put the person's name and the applicant symbol under each person's name, or above each person's name, rather. And, you know, different things about warrior, leader, all these other things. So I'm like, are we going to get the same consideration? Are you just going to put a name, you know? I'm like, wow. Wow. So, yeah, other than that, everything is good.
Apart from everything else, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
How was the play?
Tracy?
Speaking of play, I got to go see the wonderful, wonderful Hades Town. I'm doing a paper on that for my classics class, teaching Greek and Roman mythology. And so, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard of Hades Town.
Oh, yes.
But the way they did it, so I didn't realize. I knew it was about Eurydice and Orpheus, but I did not also know that it was about Persephone and Hades. So, amazing.
So my ancient source, of course, is our Ovid and Virgil for Eurydice and old Orpheus, and all and then for the source for Persephone and Hades is the Homeric hymn to Demeter. So, you know, and I'm really excited about this paper because of the different, you know, the different things that happened, how Ovid basically was calling out Virgil for his version, and how Ovid's version doesn't mention. I'm really excited. As much as I hate writing papers, I'm kind of excited about this paper, but I still hate writing papers. Because if I didn't have to write a paper and just present orally, I'm good. I'm golden. It's just writing stuff down, and yeah. So that part. And also, there's speaking of Orpheus, I found this book. It's called Black Orpheus. It's basically about how music has played a part in the liberation of Black people. And it's nine original essays. So it's basically from the Harlem Renaissance to Toni Morrison. So you have all these, see you in the morning. You have all these people, you know, so you have, hold on a second. Oh, you got it. It's like, you know, Langston Hughes, Toni Morrison, Alice Walker, who else? Oh, just, you know, all these, Mizaki, Sade, and all these amazing, Black writers, you know, writing about, how, the Orphic, theme has played out in Black liberation. So, and I just found this book by accident, and, from the quality of the book, no one had ever heard of it. So my next project is I'm going
Did I lose you? Tracy.
I hear something, but I can't make it out.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see if she comes back. Something I did want to I mentioned earlier, Nitwit Nero, you know, with the J.D. Mandel thing at the Nebraska rally. Scott, do you remember last week we were talking about?
I hear beeps.
Yep, we lost her. But you remember in the last week or two, we've talked about a guy called the Herbster?
Oh, yeah, I thought you were making that name up. Like,
no, his name's Herbster.
Yeah, it's his actual name. Yeah, I remember.
The handsy, gropey, creepy, allegedly guy who stuck his hand up the dress of the skirt of a young woman who is a woman who is a senator, a Republican senator in the state of Nebraska.
Yeah, I remember that, yes.
Yeah. Well, considering it was a Trump rally, you're gonna invite the grabber, aren't you?
Not unless he's signing for the hearing impaired.
Well, no, it's a Trump rally. I mean, you want all the grabbers you can, yeah.
Yeah.
So, for a minute there, until I realized he was slightly younger, I saw the giant cowboy hat, and I actually thought it was Roy Tolamore. He was going to whip out, because he's got the vest, and I thought he was going to whip out his tiny pistol.
Channeling his inner Roy Rogers.
And, no, it was the Herbster, and the Herbster had plenty to say.
We're going to take sex education out of the schools and put it back in the homes where it belongs.
Yeah. You tell them, Herbster. You gropey, handsy, gross, creepy.
We expect to see Mr. Stork as part of show and tell.
God. Yeah, put it back in the home where it belongs.
The old cabbage patch theory of procreation.
Storks, cabbage patches,
birds, bees.
I think you've got them all.
What the fluorescent fuck, Robin?
He has to be absolutely oblivious to the concept of irony to even say that. And he was the warm-up act for Trump.
They're getting pretty near to the bottom of the barrel, wouldn't you say? I mean,
that's that speech from Mr. Roberts, isn't it? They had to really be looking, and they had to scrape the bottom of the barrel to find you.
Yeah, Captain Morton.
and then this, because this is a moment too. They had a gubernatorial debate in Georgia too, and there's a candidate named Candace Taylor. And she explained what happened during the pandemic. Get the hockey puck.
What did you do as governor? What would you push to help address those issues dealing with academics?
Absolutely. It's gotten way worse because of the pandemic, because our governor opened the state, which was great, but he didn't open the schools. And so kids were at home for a year, not ingrained in education and routine. Children need routine. And what we saw happen is children with depression or children that were being molested. Let's talk about the hard stuff. Kids that are being molested never had a reprieve. They were molested day after day after day, and their parents were not teaching them anything. And so staying consistent, for one thing, and having after school programs and offering things to get them out.
You do.
Children need to be ingrained.
On behalf of the surviving brain cells inside of my head, they would like to thank you for killing off a fair number with that one little audio clip. What is in the water in Georgia, Robin?
Stupid is in the water.
They better up the fluoride and cut down on the stupid.
Maybe this is the natural expected outcome. After years and years and years of people drinking water where people have, peed out their various and sundry psychoactive meds into it.
Well, that too. My God.
Well, I mean, it's just the children, didn't open schools, and children's just sitting at home getting molested.
I have to.
Need I mention it's a Republican state?
Well, no, hell, that's a given. That's you understood, as it were. I just don't know. I mean, whatever's in the water, I have to echo William Claude Duckenfield. I never touch water because fish in it. So, and I don't mean swim, boys and girls.
No, fish fucking that.
That's right. They do their little fishy thing. Well, I had a clarification for Tracy, but she I can't. Is she not back yet? Or
the call dropped.
Oh, because see, I got an invitation, but and she even explained it to me on the phone, not on the show, but on the phone when I talked to her about it. I said that I couldn't be there, but she said there's a streaming aspect to it, and but I didn't know if I had to RSVP to the streaming part. See, this is what happens when the person you send it to is not quick on the uptake. And I apparently, when that arrived, and I still haven't gotten much better at uptaking. So, anyway, we'll sort it out.
Okay.
We will sort it out.
Yep. Have you had your coffee this evening in your horn mug?
I used the horn mug for a couple of days, and now I've gone back to Daffy Duck.
Well, you got to have a rotation there.
Yeah, but yeah, I was put the horn mug up in the cabinet, and I'm very careful with it. I got pillows all over the floor in the kitchen because the kitchen floor, for some reason, is harder than the other floor. But anyway, yes, I every time I drink out of that mug, I think of you and the Horn family. So there.
Well, I'm glad. I'm just terribly, well, terribly glad.
Anyway, Tracy, if you're listening, I won't be there in person, but I will RSVP for the streaming thing because I do want to see that part of it because I think that we were all in it with you, although we didn't do near as much. We didn't do any work other than encouragement, but that's something I'd like to be part of, if only from afar. So there.
Maybe, maybe there can be streaming. I don't know.
Well, yeah, that was the whole point of the thing. I didn't know what I was RSVPing to. If the part in person where there's food and fun and stuff, I wasn't going to be able to make that. But I didn't realize that you also had to RSVP to the streaming thing. Or maybe you don't. See, it'd be so helpful if Tracy would clarify this for me once and for all, knowing in advance that I am sometime very thick in the understanding department. So anyway, I'm sure she'll let me know one way or another.
I have no doubt. Well, Scott, you have yourself a good evening. And
the show's damn near over.
Damn near over, sorry. Yeah. That's okay.
Time flees or flies. It does one of those.
Well, said the flea to the fly, let us flee. Said the fly to the flea, let us fly.
Fly, Robin, fly.
Yeah, I was
going to. Who sang that?
Silver Convention.
That's right. You're right. Correctamundo, my friend. All right. Well, I'll let you get on with.
I'm just going to. I'm going to wrap things up, and we'll see how it goes from there.
Okay. Do we have any luck with the fundraising?
No, we're still $150 away from done.
Oh man. Well, I'm not going to tell you that now because I don't want to stretch this any longer than it has to go. But anyway, you take care.
I certainly will.
And keep smiling in spite of the bastards.
Makes them wonder what you're up to.
That's right. And Horn family, all of you, I hope your May is just the best May you've ever had.
I couldn't agree more.
All righty, Roo.
Take care, Scott. Bye now.
See ya. Bye.
And so, yeah, we're pretty much at the end of the program. Just a couple of things to sort of put a bow on this Moran Monday. Little cop problem in Wilmington, North Carolina. It was 2 years ago when dashboard cam footage showed a particular cop and two other officers, you know, being racist, the racists that they are. It was in the wake of the cop lynching of George Floyd again. Remember, Nitwit Nero said,
"Can't we just shoot him? I mean, like, just shoot him in the leg."
So it was June 2020. The videos when the video came out, some of the cops were saying things in the recording like how a local magistrate needed a bullet in her head right then and move on. Another one said, "We need a civil war to wipe them off the fucking map." Another one said, referred to a Wilmington Police Department sergeant who's now a lieutenant as a thing. "She's dumb as a box of rocks." And what I said earlier about homophobia is now a defense. Yeah, here's a beauty. And I think maybe because we point out trends from time to time here, look for this one. So one of the cops that got fired in Wilmington for all this hateful, racist horse shit was a petitioner named Officer James Gilmore. And since he had a cop union, he appealed to be reinstated. Now wait for it, because it's Moran Monday. Here's the reason he felt like he had a legal right to be reinstated as a racist on the Wilmington Police Department. Um, He said that he has a right to be reinstated because his hate was protected speech based upon his religious beliefs.
The Holy Bible teaches that no one should bow down before another human being or idol and worship them. This conversation is about the Black Lives Matter protesters and is not racially motivated, but express my personal opinions based on my religious beliefs.
Jesus. And of course, we're here because the Supreme Court took us here. And one of the things we kind of, well, I wanted to make sure we got to today because we talked about this case earlier. And we've talked from time to time about how when it comes right down to it, there are no liberal justices. The Supreme Court of the United States is and always has been and always will be a conservative institution because protecting the status quo of the things the law protects is kind of everything. And so, do you remember way back when these vulgar anti-women groups violated a Massachusetts statute by sticking posters with allegedly aborted fetuses in the face of women who were, you know, maybe going to the women's health care clinic for a fucking pap smear or a mammogram or just to pick up their birth control pills? But these hateful grannies did that, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and by a 9-0 verdict, including Ruth Bader Ginsburg, they held that it was a violation of the vulgar anti-woman granny's rights to free speech to tell them they couldn't assault women on their way into the clinic. Remember that? Well, they've done it again. 9-0 decision. Justice Stephen Breyer, identified here as a liberal justice, by a 9-0 margin, they overturned the lower court's ruling that when the city of Boston rejected Camp Constitution and their Christian flag, that they were not violating Director Harold Shurtleff and Camp Constitution's rights. The idea that you would have a group called Camp Constitution that would use the Christian flag, well, in light of the fact that there's no Christianity mentioned at all in the Constitution, well, that's a little ironic. And the whole program in Boston was designed to promote diversity and tolerance and acceptance among different communities in Boston, which God knows has had its fair share of problems. Well, no. Boston went on and just ended the damn program, so maybe that made it easier for all 9 members of the Supreme Court to say, well, shit. Camp Constitution's allegedly religious rights are more important than trying not to violate the First Amendment. So, it's not exactly a surprise, is it? There will be more and more and more of this, and eventually the First Amendment will be, as I have said for years, nothing more than a life support system for the religion industry. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. So that's it, y'all. Thank you. Let's see, a couple of thank yous, I think, to send out here. Thank you to Will, formerly of Chicago, now in Southern California. Will just got us down to $125 to go. And Jude, Women's Standing, just got us down to $100 to go. Women's Standing offers support, especially since we stood at Bremerton High School last Saturday on the 50-yard line sideline. Thank you for doing that, Jude. And thank you for helping keep us going. Thank you, Clarence. Clarence, with a follow-up based on what Tracy was talking about in regard to Professor Malina Abdullah's violent removal from a mayoral debate, Karen Bass has spoken out. She was, as noted, a mayoral candidate. She was up on the stage and said, "I couldn't see. I had no idea who was being removed." Meanwhile, Cal State LA has been silent as a graven image. And Professor Abdullah said, "I was yelling for help, and Kevin Bass and Kevin DeLeon, friend with whom I've been very close for more than 20 years, said nothing, not even a simple, 'Please put her down,' nor did any other candidate. It's both hurtful and outrageous." The university, meanwhile, says, we'll provide a statement after full review of the incident." Yeah, you do that. So thanks, everybody. Thanks again to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors this evening. For the overnight crew, if we raise $100, we will at least knock down the fundraising goal to $600. So it'll be $9 tomorrow. Thank you. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky earlier in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Remember, brand new Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, headon.live. Please stay, thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Now a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Still got to get my second booster. You get yours. Wear your mask in crowded places. Please. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, maintain your social distance, you know all that. And if somebody comes shambling towards you down the street saying,
"I mean, can't we just at least shoot him in the kneecaps or something? Why do we have all these guns and all these bullets if we can't shoot people with them?"
Avoid avoid that Mar-a-Lard-ass Mussolini as if he was the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.